Hello and welcome back to Talking Talmud. I'm Ann Gordon here with my friend and chavruta Yordana Osband. Our daf of the day, Masachet Bava Kama, daf Tet Zion, page 16. So our daf opens with more discussion on the Mishnah about those cases where we would have property damaging other property from, for example, animals, which would be considered not expected to do this damage, right? And then the Gemara jumps to where I want to talk about today, where we have, the wild animals where in fact damage might well be expected. Hazeva, right? So the Mishnah, brings a list and we talked about it. So now the citation here is the wolf and the lion. Don't forget the bear, the leopard, the bardalas, which we have to define, and the snake. And they are considered, known to be damaging. Even if they have never actively damaged before, just it's in the breed. Amar Yehuda Nafrisa. So the Gemara says, what it like it needs to answer. Oh, I'm sorry, I skipped the words. My Bardalas. What's the Bardalas? Amar Yehuda Nafrisa. What's a Nafrisa? Because that's also not helpful to me, right? If I don't know what a Nafrisa is, it doesn't answer me Bardalas. My Nafrisa. Amar Yosef Appa. Rav Yosef says it's an Appa. Now, what's an Appa? So this is a good question. It seems to be that it is a word in Assyrian, which be, you know was maybe Abba in Assyrian, and in Ap in Babylonian it became Appa. And still, I'm going to say I don't know what this animal is, right? Lo kasha. The Gemara says no, that's not a difficulty, not knowing what it is. Kan b'tzavoa zachar, kan b'tzavoa nekiva. So the Gemara explains really what he's talking about is a hyena. A male hyena, and then the Mishnah is talking about a female hyena. These are the spotted hyena. These are the bad guys in The Lion King, right? It's another one of these wild animals that has the potential to be, an attack animal, whatever, without provocation, without there being any history of attack. So the Gemara explains that there's a difference here between the female and the male. The Tanya tzavua zachar lachar sheva shanim. Nase atalef. The Gemara says that a male hyena, after 7 years, becomes. I'm just reading the words. Becomes a bat. A bat. It's some kind of poisonous bat. Atalef lachar shevashanim nase arpad, and the bat after 7 years morphs, becomes into a different bat. One is insectivorous, and one is herbivorous, meaning does it eat insects? Does it eat only vegetation? Kimosh. And then the herbivorous bat becomes a thistle after 7 years. And then kimosh lachar choach. I'm going to say choach. I think that's how you pronounce that. The thistle becomes a briar. Shade. And then the briar after 7 years becomes a demon. And the Gemara goes on to say, similarly, a person's spine, your backbone, 7 years after a person's death, it becomes a snake. And then the Gemara goes on and says, that case of a person's backbone only becoming a snake only would apply for somebody who did not bow during modim, the tefillah, the bracha in the blessing in Shemona Asrei, in the Amidah, as some kind of supernatural retribution that's considered fitting. You don't bow, your backbone becomes a snake again, presumably after death. Now, all of the above is not scientific in the way that we know that it to be, right? The idea that any of these things will morph into the others is, I think, inherently difficult. But the point that we're interested in, I guess, for the purpose of explaining the Mishnah, is a recognition that there's a different word for the female hyena versus the male hyena. And then the Gemara here goes on to make it like to reduce it to something very simple, but also in that way to then make me. Make us puzzled what's going on with all of this interlude about how they one animal morphs into the next. The Gemara says, Amar Mar, Rabbi Meir Omer, Afatzavua, meaning in that list of the animals that are automatically considered mu'ad, automatically dangerous in this way, Rabbi Meir adds the tzavua, the hyena. I think that should be simple enough. This process of one morphing into the next, into the next, into the next is unclear to me why it matters, like, why, except for to say that there's a distinction between the male and the female, I'm not sure why this is, besides the question of accuracy, I'm not sure why we would want it to be accurate. I'm not sure what the Gemara is trying to get at here. Dana, maybe you have a thought.
No, I mean, I think it's interesting the sort of a familiarity with these types of animals. And you know, they even cases of like sort of a domesticated lion and things like that. You know, it's hard to imagine. I can't imagine how much they had to do because some of these are not animals that are native to Israel, at least.
Right. So I was wondering about that. I feel it goes back to our elephant question that perhaps there are more animals and more e either more traveling animals or even more different locales that actually had these animals than we think about now. I'm not sure. The lion seems to really, they have a lot of detail on the lion. They must have encountered a lion in a regular way.
Right. And look, and I think this also is an example, like halacha encompasses all parts of life. So they're going to go through all these kinds of animals too, even though it probably was uncommon, it's still something that needs to be dealt with. So I'm going to move on to the Mishnah that appears on Amud Bet, which is finally getting to us about tam and muad, which are words we keep floating around, right? Tam is basically an ox that we do not expect to gore, to hurt people. And muad is the designation of an ox 3 times after it's gored. In other words, we expect that it causes damage. Now, we usually use this in terms of ox and of oxes, but as you saw in the Mishnah before, anything can be muad, right? A person is humans are considered to be muad, right? We just cause damage wherever we are. So the question then becomes, ma bein tam lemuad? What's the difference between tam and muad? And it's not, you know, it's not talking about compensation necessarily, right? But it's saying Elisha hatza mishalem chatzin nezek migufo umuad mishalem nezek shalem min ha'aliyah. So the difference is that the tam pays half damages from the body of the animal itself. In other words, what the owner is liable to is limited to the value of the ox that did the damage. So if the ox is worth less than half of the damages, right? Then the owner only has to pay what the ox is worth, and the damaged party just loses the remainder. In other words, you pay it off the value of the animal that caused the damage. That's really what it's coming to teach us here. That's what tam is. Whereas muad, you pay full damages, but it's from the elyah. And what's the elyah? The Gemara will explain that, but it means sort of like the best of the properties. So you're going to pay the full amount of damage, even if it ends up exceeding the actual worth of the ox itself. And so the Gemara is going to start off with trying to define this word of Eliyah, right? My Eliyah, right? What does it mean, Eliyah? I'm a Rabbi Elazar. It means with the choices of his property. It's the best of his properties. And then so they quote here a pasuk from Divrei Hayamim, chapter 32, verse 33, which talks about Chizkiyahu HaMelech, and it says that he laid with his fathers and they buried him in the Ma'aleh of the graves of the descendants of David. Va'amar Rabbi Elazar, and Rabbi Elazar said, "B'Ma'aleh, when it says Ma'aleh, Eitzel Me'ulim Sheba Mishpacha, against the finest in that family. Umay Ninu, and who were they? David and Shlomo," right? Because he came from the Judean kings and he was buried with his ancestors of David and Shlomo. Then from there they go on to you know, from there they're going to go on to a couple of different interpretations of Rabbi Elazar and other verses. One just a regular interpretation, one where he has a machlokas with somebody else. And that's kind of like what the daf is going to spend its time on, is, you know, gets onto a tangent of some agadata. But we'll see that there's not going to be that much discussion about this particular Mishnah, but we'll talk about it a little bit. We'll talk about it a little bit more tomorrow and see how they actually wrap it up. It's interesting that this Mishnah the discussion that takes place on the Gemara, and you'll see this again from tomorrow, doesn't really have to do with this Mishnah itself. It basically is all tangent. So I think from the Gemara's perspective, this was a pretty straightforward Mishnah, as opposed to some of the last few Mishnayos that we had which were much more difficult to understand.
I think also some of the discussion of this Mishnah has taken place already not on the Mishnah, but just, you know, the concepts and the issues have already kind of been being raised since the beginning.
Right. And this is going to be the last Mishnah of the Perek. So we're going to wrap it up. You know, we're starting a new Perek tomorrow. So I agree with you. I think it's sort of like, this is a short Mishnah that just says very explicitly, what's the difference when it comes to the compensation between Tam and Muad in terms of where you get the money from? And I don't think there's that much explanation that needs to happen, because a lot of this was sort of embedded in Mishnah and Gemara that appeared before. Well, that's our DAF discussion for the day. Rank us, review us on all major podcasts. Thank you to Rabbi Michelle Farber for hosting us on the Hadron website. Let us know what you thought about this DAF on our Talking Talmud Facebook page. And until tomorrow, go and learn.